Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 25th, 2016. Aid agencies evacuate South Sudanese staff members from Bor and Awil.
Several Equatorian staff members have been evacuated. We have reports that 92 staff members from humanitarian organizations have been evacuated from Awil and 12 from Bor.
And Amnesty International says the UN mission in South Sudan failed to protect civilians during the July fighting in Juba.
The UN is barred by the government from going through checkpoints using armored vehicles, and so they're not able to accompany women all the way to the market. And this really needs to be remedied and changed so that women can be protected when they go to the market.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new report released today by Amnesty International says South Sudanese government soldiers deliberately killed, tortured and raped civilians as the United Nations mission in South Sudan failed to protect them during the July fighting in Juba. Peacekeepers fled their positions under fire, leaving civilians exposed to crossfire. SINBO reports one rape survivor tells Amnesty International that government soldiers raped her as UN peacekeepers and security personnel ignored her cries for help.
A fundamental international humanitarian law is that all parties of a conflict must differentiate between combatants and civilians should never be targeted. Joanne Mariner, a London-based senior crisis response advisor for Amnesty International, says South Sudanese government soldiers repeatedly broke those laws during the fighting that erupted in July, and she says the violations continued for weeks afterward.
Government soldiers violated both international humanitarian law, which is the law of war, and international human rights law. They carried out really a brutal attack, deliberately killing civilians, raping women and girls, and carried out massive looting in the wake of the clashes in July. So it was really a host of laws that were broken by South Sudanese government soldiers.
In a new 32-page report called We Did Not Believe We Could Survive, Amnesty International says government soldiers assume that civilian support is aligned with their ethnic identity. So government soldiers gang-raped, killed, and looted civilians, largely based on ethnic identities.
And many women told us that the rapists made comments about their husbands being the enemy, about them, their families being the enemy, about their children being the enemy. So, you know, there really is a strong ethnic motivation and a sense that all Nuer are rebels.
The report says at least 50 civilians were killed between July 10th and July 12th at two Protection of Civilians sites at the UN base in Jebel, a neighborhood in Juba. Two Chinese peacekeepers were also killed after an explosive device struck their armored vehicle on July 10th. Amnesty International says the UN's inability to carry out their mandate to protect civilians made matters worse for hundreds of civilians. One woman told Amnesty International that she ran toward a UN base to escape being raped by government soldiers. She says she saw UN peacekeepers in private security and ran toward them, but government soldiers tripped her. And despite her cries for help, which she said could be heard by UN peacekeepers, no one came to her rescue. In another case on July 12th, after the ceasefire was declared, civilians say uniformed men, who they believe to be UN police, asked them to go back to the Protection of Civilians site as the violence seemed to simmer down. But the civilians refused and insisted on staying inside the UN base, which offered more protection than the POC site. They also said that violence could break out at any moment. When the civilians refused to return to the POC site, Amnesty International says UN personnel allegedly shot tear gas into the crowd.
Without really even giving them much warning, just suddenly spraying tear gas on a very frightened crowd of mostly women and children. We have testimonies from a number of families that some of the children fell unconscious, that elderly people were extremely, badly affected by the use of tear gas. So, you know, we're very concerned that this was a disproportionate and excessive use of force against a very vulnerable civilian population. And absolutely an inappropriate action from the United Nations.
The UN mission in South Sudan cannot be immediately reached for comment. Mariner says since July, there has been some progress in the UN's response to keep civilians safe.
There has been improvement lately in that there are more UN patrols where they're going out with armored vehicles and sometimes foot patrols and helping women get to market safely. But there's still, I mean, I think the response still could use some improvement. And in particular, the UN is barred by the government from going through checkpoints using armored vehicles. And so they're not able to accompany women all the way to the market. And this really needs to be remedied and changed so that women can be protected when they go to the market and bring back food to their families.
The UN Security Council approved a 4,000-strong regional protection force in August, in addition to the peacekeepers already serving in South Sudan, to act as a buffer between government and opposition forces. Despite repeated calls from the international community, that force has still not entered the country. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The spokesperson for the United Nations Human Rights says there is a rise in ethnic hate speech in South Sudan. Ravina Shamadasani says aid agencies and the United Nations have evacuated their South Sudanese staff members, who are mainly from Equatoria, to Juba because of credible threats to their lives in Awil and Bor. She says South Sudanese leaders should arrest individuals who are preaching hate speech aimed at provoking ethnic violence in the country.
Over the past 2 weeks, letters with graphic warnings of violence against people from the Equatoria region were left outside the gates of humanitarian organizations in the northwest of the country, in northern Bahar El Ghazal state. Now, these letters contained very disturbing threats against people from Equatoria, urging them to leave or be eliminated.
Can you tell us the demographic combination of people in South Sudan? I mean, why people from Equatoria particularly?
As you may be aware, there are many different tribal groups within South Sudan. When we talk about Equatorians, we're talking about people in the south of the country, from the central Equatoria, the western Equatoria, and the eastern Equatoria states. Most of these threats are coming in the northwest of the country, in northern Bahar El Ghazal state, where the Dinka community are, as a reprisal for the killing of Dinka in Juba, which is in central Equatoria. They are asking for all Equatorians in northern Bahar El Ghazal to go back to the Equatoria region.
Any response from leaders in the country? Are leaders trying to contain the situation? It sounds a little bit alarming.
It is very alarming. And the High Commissioner is very concerned because we all know the history of South Sudan and how dangerous ethnic hate speech can be in this country. The High Commissioner is calling on all political and community leaders to just rein in this rhetoric before it translates into action and before it leads to mass atrocities. And then it goes back to the cycle of violence and revenge and more violence among the different ethnic communities. The response from state actors has been mixed. Unfortunately, certain state officials in the region have reportedly joined in the hate speech.
When you say it's coming from the Bahar El Ghazal region, are there specific towns, specific locations where these messages are coming out from?
Yes, well, in particular in Awil West, there are a lot of these messages. Now, one positive thing is that the acting governor of Awil has issued a press statement in which he called on all citizens, to join the government in condemning these alleged threats, against what he calls our Equatorian brothers and sisters. Now, this is a very welcome press statement. And the staff of one humanitarian organization, a national staff member who was Equatorian, he was attacked. But the state authorities acted swiftly to arrest alleged perpetrators of this attack. We welcome that. And it's very important that people, individuals, are brought to justice for specific crimes that they've committed so that we don't have entire communities being branded with the same brush.
How about reports that some people from Equatoria who are working in different NGOs have been evacuated back to Juba? Could you tell us where these people have been evacuated from?
Yes, indeed. Several staff members of humanitarian organizations, now these are NGOs as well as UN agencies, several Equatorian staff members have been evacuated. We have reports that 92 staff members from humanitarian organizations have been evacuated from Awil and 12 from Bor.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan is there to protect civilians. Why is this happening when you have a mission on the ground to protect people? Why should you evacuate them? They're supposed to do their work.
As you know, the situation in South Sudan has been quite volatile for a while. There was a peace agreement, but unfortunately that seems to be on hold for the moment. And the situation is very, very tense and very volatile. Violent attacks tend to happen quite frequently. And this particular attack on the 8th of October seems to have sparked a reaction, which we find to be very alarming. And this is why we're calling on all political leaders to take note of this and to react with urgent and concrete measures to rein this in before it spirals out of control once again.
That's Ravina Shamdasani, the spokesperson for the United Nations Human Rights. She was speaking to me from Geneva earlier today. President Salva Kiir is asking all 28 governors of the states he unilaterally created late last year to work with other political parties and reconcile communities in order to tackle widespread insecurity. The president invited the governors to the capital for a three-day training session, as we hear from Tito Justin in Juba.
President Kiir opened the workshop yesterday by swearing in the 28 governors as chairpersons of the ruling SPLM party in their respective states. SPLM chairpersons are normally elected by party members. The president did not give any reason for not following SPLM rules. Mr. Kiir called on the governors to unite their citizens in the quest for peace.
I appointed you because I knew you were very serious people that I knew you will work. This challenging time needs people who can work. If we work together with one mind, with one word, with one heart, we can overcome all the problems that we are facing. This is what I want from you.
Mr. Kiir says South Sudan is a nation for all and therefore requires everybody's participation regardless of their party affiliation.
Relationship between the SPLM and other political parties. We have to intensify that work so that, you know, instead of fighting one another, we have relations.
Jubek State Governor Agustino Jadala says the ruling party must do more to unite the different ethnic communities across the country.
The government and the party has to do a lot of positive efforts to regain SPLM strength by empowering our members in all aspects and reconciling our communities so as to create a conducive political environment and minimize the differences among the communities to enhance the security in the country.
President Kiir warned the governors against taking unnecessary trips to Juba, which he says drains state budgets. Mr. Kiir says unless he personally authorizes a governor to travel to Juba, the governors should remain in their home state.
If you want to come, ask the permission right away from there. If I permit you, because you're ungodly, you will meet me, you come. If I have not given you that green light and you come, then you are manabarkuda.
President Kiir urged all 28 governors to support First Vice President Taban Dengai in his effort to fully implement the August 2015 peace agreement. This is the first SPLM induction workshop since President Kiir unilaterally expanded the country's 10 states to 28. There have been reports of fighting in former Western Baragazal and Upper Nile states over the creation of the new states as some communities resist being part of a different state. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the effects of living in cities. That story is coming up after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People. will speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you express love towards your family and friends?
By take care of them and show my love to them by doing for them what they're telling me to do and respect their words and to show them how important they are to me.
Giving them necessary help whenever possible. And I show love to my friends by paying them occasional visits.
I usually express love towards my family and friends through maybe being closer to them and maybe also caring about their needs and even asking their day-to-day maybe situation and the conditions of living.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about air pollution. People who live in areas with polluted air increase the risk of developing hypertension, a leading risk factor for the development of heart disease, known as high blood pressure. The hypertension study is the largest of its kind to establish the deadly link. VOA's Jessica Bauman reports.
The study looked at hypertension in 41,000 people in five different countries, including Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, and Spain, for 5 to 8 years. It's part of the long-term Europe study of cohorts for air pollution effects, known as ESCAPE, which focuses on health problems associated with pollution. At the beginning of the hypertension study, beginning in 2008, none of the participants reported having high blood pressure or taking medicine to control it. By 2011, 6,200 people reported having developed hypertension and started taking blood pressure-lowering drugs. Most lived in urban areas where air pollution is highest. Air pollution is measured in micrograms of particulate matter per cubic meter. The researchers found that for every 5 micrograms per cubic meter of particulate matter, hypertension increased by 1/5 or 22% in people living in the most polluted areas. Epidemiologist Barbara Hoffman works for the Center for Health and Society at Heinrich Heine University in Germany. Dr. Hoffman, who led the study, says many of these cases of high blood pressure could be prevented.
So it is a very important result if you can see that something that you can actually change, I mean, we can actually reduce air pollution, can have such an influence on such an important health outcome.
The findings were published in the European Heart Journal. Hoffman says researchers will now study areas of where pollution is low, looking at the health effects of cleaner air.
But this is, of course, important in terms of regulation because you would like to regulate the air pollution down to a level where you don't see any effects anymore. So therefore, it's important to really look at areas of low exposure and see how far down can you go until you don't see any effects anymore.
It's believed that air pollution leads to health problems by causing lung inflammation that spreads throughout the body, eventually leading to blood vessel and heart damage. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Refugee Agency reports a record-breaking number of deaths among refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea, making 2016 the deadliest year ever. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
There are still 2 months to go before the end of the year, yet the UN Refugee Agency reports deaths on the Mediterranean Sea have nearly exceeded the death toll for all of 2015. The agency reports at least 3,740 lives have been lost this year, just 31 short of last year's total. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says this is the highest number ever recorded in the Mediterranean.
If you consider that last year there was 1 million people crossing the Mediterranean and the number of deaths is about the same as this year, when 3 times less people have crossed, then you could say that the death rate has increased threefold.
The UNHCR reports 1 in 88 people crossing the Mediterranean Sea in 2016 is likely to die, compared to one death for every 269 arrivals last year. It says the death rate is even higher on the central Mediterranean route between Libya and Italy, where one death is recorded for every 47 arrivals. Spindler says the route from North Africa to Italy is longer and more perilous than that between Turkey and Greece. He tells VOA more refugees and migrants are losing their lives because smugglers are changing their business practices.
They seem to be sending large numbers of embarkations as opposed to one by one. Smuggling has become a big business. It's been done almost on an industrial scale. So now they send several boats at the same time. And that puts rescue services in difficulty because they need to rescue several thousand people on several hundred boats.
Spindler says the dangers also are greater because smugglers increasingly are using lower quality vessels. He says people are set adrift in flimsy inflatable rafts that often do not last the journey. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Farmers and traders in the Imatong state capital, Torit, say a good harvest this season is lowering food prices in the market. They say prices of corn, sorghum and other food has dropped by more than 5% in recent weeks due to an increase in food supplies in the market. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Here in Torit's old market, farmers display their food commodities on white polythene bags. Buyers walk around from one stall to another, trying to negotiate better prices. Among the food commodities sold in this market are maize, corn, sorghum, cassava, beans, and simsim, all produced locally in the nearby villages by small-scale farmers. Local farmers often wake up early in the morning and walk several kilometers carrying small quantities of food items on their heads to the market. Helen Sebastian is a farmer from the neighborhood village of Lolere. She says fresh produce like hers have helped lower food prices, which were extremely high a few weeks ago. Speaking in Arabic, Sebastian says she uses the money she earns from her harvest to buy basic necessities like soap, salt, and sugar for her family.
We have cultivated enough, but only that most parts of our farms have been affected due to little rain. If not, we would have supplied a lot to the market.
Olga Titi Tobiolo buys bulk food products from the local farmers, then sells smaller quantities to residents. Speaking in Arabic, she says customers, including those who cannot afford to buy a 50-kilogram sack of grain or flour from the shops, can afford a small portion in cups sold from the market stalls.
A
cup of flour at 10 South Sudanese pound, groundnut at 25 South Sudanese pound, and a cup of white ant at 10 South Sudanese pound. All these are brought by the local village farmers who are helping the market now. Since the supply is high, we reduce the price, and if it lowers, we increase. They have brought a lot from the sites of Lopit and all villages around Torit.
Christine Iba, a resident of Torit town, was at Torit's old market today to buy food for her family. Speaking in Arabic, she applauds the local farmers for supplying large amount of fresh food to the market.
I would like to thank them a lot because they are digging and their effort is what is giving us courage, since they are able to supply the market with food at a reduced price.
Luca Amarin, a Torit town resident who often buys food from the old market, is urging the farmers to work even harder to produce more food.
It is very important because you will be able to reduce the price. The people bring from the village will force them to reduce their price, and also to help the poor people in the village because of hard working. So they are able to produce their own food.
Lily Hidita is the chairperson of the Torit Chamber of Commerce. Hidita says The low food prices in Turit makes life a little easier for residents who a few months ago could not afford to buy any food.
You find there's a bit different. You find like one bag of maize, you go to the 1,150. And when you see the local produce, you'll just get with 1,000. The reduction of prices because people in the rural area, they got a good harvest this year. We thank God for that.
But in other villages of Imotong Estate, including Pageri Payam, in Magui County, hundreds of farmers have deserted their farms because of rampant insecurity. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Amnesty International confirmed today what others in the international community already knew, that South Sudanese government soldiers deliberately killed and tortured civilians and raped women and girls in July, and UNMISS failed to protect them. The Amnesty International report says in some cases, peacekeepers fled their positions under fire, leaving civilians exposed to crossfire. One rape survivor told Amnesty that government soldiers raped her with UN peacekeepers and security personnel within clear earshot, but they ignored her cries for help. International humanitarian law states that all parties of a conflict must differentiate between combatants and civilians, and that civilians should be never targets. Joanne Mariner of Amnesty says South Sudanese government soldiers repeatedly broke those laws during the fighting that erupted in the capital in July, and that the violations continued for weeks afterward. A spokeswoman for the United Nations Human Rights Office of the High Commissioner says there's been a significant rise in ethnic hate speech in South Sudan in recent weeks. Ravina Shamdasnani says the UN and other aid groups evacuated their South Sudanese staff from Equatoria and relocated them to other areas because of credible threats to their lives. She says South Sudanese leaders should arrest individuals who are preaching hate speech aimed at provoking ethnic violence in the country. And finally, farmers and traders in the Imotong State capital, Turit, say a good harvest this season is lowering food prices in the market. They say prices of corn, sorghum, and other food has dropped by more than 5% in recent weeks due to an increase in food supplies. Turit's old market, farmers displayed their food commodities there on white polythene bags. Buyers walked from shop to shop trying to negotiate better prices. Among the food commodities, besides corn and sorghum, are cassava tubers, beans, and simsim. Local farmers often wake up early and walk several kilometers carrying small quantities of food on their heads to the market. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Sudan by Panda by a group calling itself SOB.
Yeah, SOB only. No, I know you feel the same thing I felt for Sudan. Yeah, SOB in the hood. Yeah. Sudan is the biggest, smallest, greatest, poorest, richest, like a young, beautiful African girl, fed in love with hydra-headed leaders, shielded by fame and ambition, ripped by petroleum and religions, and forsaken by all, with exception of jungle boys, Nase, Akhe, Kise, Lafe, Bera. Sudan by Panda, who came by Panda, Sudan by Panda.
We've been listening to a group calling itself SOB with the song Sudan by Panda. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.